is Live Bet Sunday on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Fresh hour of Live Bet Sunday with a whole lot of action going on around the country. Thanks so much for spending part of your Sunday with us. As with the great Will Hill, I'm Ben Wilson. Big thanks to Rick Chapsky, rest of our entire team behind the scenes, helping us out here on this edition of Live Bet Sunday. We're 3 hours away from Game 7 of the NBA Finals, Indiana at Oklahoma City. Thunder minus 7, 215.5 with a little game day over money, believe it or not. Coming into the market, we'll certainly continue to talk all things NBA Finals, all the angles, props, series markets, futures, and otherwise, in addition to the NBA draft, which starts in a couple days. We'll get Ryan Hammer coming on, outstanding NBA draft analyst, to give us some insights on all the latest smoke and maybe some of the real moves there within the NBA draft betting market. Some quick updates, though, Will, as we start the show, top of the hour. There was a big bases loaded situation in San Francisco for a bet you're sweating. How did that how'd that all end up there, bottom of the third?
Not well is how it ended up. I dropped pop-up as I couldn't tell who the players were. Looked like the third baseman and the left fielder for Boston collided on a routine pop-up. Ball drops. So that kept an inning going. That would have been one out with one on. Instead, it was two out, nobody on. Eventually, like we mentioned, two out for Devers, full count, and we get a walk on a pitch violation. Always fun to get that. And then a base hit, two-run score. Devers was tagged out going to third. Part of it is he, I think, just wanted to guarantee that the second run scored. So 2-1 San Francisco as we are in the top of the fourth, two outs. So Boston got an early run off of Ray, and they were fortunate too because they hit a pop-up line drive that the left fielder, I think it was Ramos, that dropped. They have not done much since. It looks like they have a two-out base runner now, but still 2-1. Again, a lot of these games are low scoring, and then I'm fading Kyle Hendricks, but he is through four shutout innings. So six shutout innings against the Yankees, four shutout innings against Houston. Was it Logan Ohapi? I'm saying that right. Two-run homer here for the Angels. And he had a couple last night. We were just talking about this during the break. He had a couple last night. He hits one today. Nathaniel Lowe, two homers last night against the Dodgers, and then a three-run homer today. So the Dodgers continue to give the Nationals continue to give the Dodgers all sorts of problems. They have played them pretty well here this weekend. So anyone just throwing those Dodgers into your moneyline parlay thinking free spot on the bingo card, not so fast, my friend.
Hey, how many, like, you know, U.S. men's national team against Haiti tonight, like a USA, L.A. Dodgers, OKC moneyline parlay. And leg one looking to be in some peril here. Dodgers plus 168 I'm seeing on the live lines right now. Long way to go. They're only in the third, but down 3-0 as Ben Kasperius is coming. He's the bulk reliever. They're replacing Shohei Ohtani, who did strike out two in a clean first inning of work as he continues his ramp up there. Couple other updates as well. This in the college baseball. Coastal Carolina trying to make a game of it. They've just hit a two-run homer in the bottom of the seventh. So the Chanticleers, who need to win today to force a winner-take-all game three on Monday, they get a two-run shot to make it a 5-3 game. Updating the live lines here, Coastal is still plus 850 on the money line. They had their coach Kevin Schnall ejected earlier. Their ace stud pitcher on the mound today in Jacob Morrison got rocked, did not get out of the fourth inning, gave up five earned. So after a 1-0 win for LSU yesterday, 5-3, and that is pretty significant just because of the total here. Will, we saw it was 8 yesterday, went way under. Total got all the way down. It opened 8.5, got bet all the way down to 7.5 today, and now we're sitting 5-3. So if you bet this right at post or you waited too long, you lost on the under. Still might get there if this ends up 5-3 LSU, but it looks like the Tigers are in a good place as we speak right now.
Yep, something to keep an eye on. And just quickly back to Major League Baseball. As I mentioned, the Astros were being shut out by Kyle Hendricks. The shutout is gone. Mauricio Dubon with a solo homer to lead off the fifth. So that is now 2-1 Angels. And I mentioned Boston was down 2-1, two out, nobody on. They get a single. Rafaela hits a double, but Boston goes scoreless here. The runner, Toro, was thrown out at the plate to end the inning. So we head to the bottom of the fourth, 2-1, San Francisco leading, Angels leading 2-1, KC and San Diego still scoreless, and Dodgers still being shut out by Soroka, Washington up 3-0. So did you end up firing? Do you have anything on these games? I know we talked about these games and what you lean to. Do you have any action going right now?
Only thing for any of the late window games was Brandon Fott and the Diamondbacks, which in the first five, which suffered a horrific loss. They gave up four in the bottom of the fifth, up 2-1. And as it always works out, you don't pile on runs early at Coors. You're just asking for trouble, even against this version of the Sad Sack 2025 Rockies. So that's all for me. We'll talk about Sunday Night Baseball. I do have a play for Sunday Night coming up. That's in 2 hours as well. Really good matchup on Sunday night, even if nobody's watching because of the NBA Finals. But Mets Phillies to wrap up the MLB Sunday card there tonight. So coming up, Will, in about 10 minutes, we'll get Ryan Hammer on. Excited to bring him in. He's a great NBA draft analyst. He's joined us before on the show, and that's where we talk a little bit here. NBA draft coming up for next week. Round one Monday. We'll get round two round one Wednesday, round two Thursday. So it's a really nice kind of split here, and most of the betting will be taking place for the Wednesday, right, with round number one. It seems like this draft really starts at three, right? We're Cooper Flagg, number one to Dallas. You then get, you get at number two, Dylan Harper to San Antonio. Even if you want to say, kind of express some discomfort with that pick or surprise because he was on a team that didn't even make the NCAA tournament as a freshman, well, the betting odds indicate San Antonio has been locked on Harper for some time, and he is the guy. Really now it seems to start at three, and that's the question after Ace Bailey's. The rumors have been that he has been falling down the draft boards here. Philadelphia picks at three, and so that's where I'm fascinated to see what the Sixers do, and man, is that a pick they've got to get right or what, Will, with all the negativity that's gone on in that franchise over the past couple of years, right?
Yeah, and it's fascinating for a couple of reasons. Bailey, his stock, like you said, is falling, but it seems to be intentionally falling where, there's questions over who's advising him, where he wants to go. He doesn't want to go to Philly because I'm guessing he doesn't want to be blocked, and he wants playing time and he wants to be able to spread his wings and get shots, get minutes, and he doesn't feel like he can do that in Philly where they're more of a win-now team. My question, I think it's probably Edgecombe at three, just semi-educated guess just based on their needs. But how do you approach this if you're Philly? Do you approach this with the thinking, East is wide open, if we can somehow nurture Embiid through 50, 60 games, pace him, save him for the playoffs, play him here and there. We can't get 82 games out of him and then the playoffs, we know that. But if we can nurture him with Maxey, with McCain, with our pick, do we look at this move as a win now and we maybe think about trading it for a veteran or drafting a win now player? Or do you think, Embiid, anything we get out of him is a bonus. That's almost a sunk cost. Let's just do whatever's best for the future. We'll build around Maxey, McCain, and whoever we pick here. So I don't know. I think you have to really look at Embiid like it's anything he gives you is a bonus because he's just been so unreliable in terms of staying healthy. I guess it's Edgecombe. Do you have any feeling here on what fits the best, where they're going from a betting perspective? I mean, I'm in Connecticut. We can't bet the draft anyway. It's been very difficult when you look around, even states that have betting. These books, these sports books, they just don't want to post it. They don't want to book it. They feel like, I think a lot of it started with the Banchero draft 3 years ago where Banchero was 20-1 the week of and Woj just saying, oh, it's not going to be Banchero. It's going to be Jabari Smith. And they got burned on the info and they've gotten beaten on these drafts and the books don't want to take any money on markets that they can't win. So it's hard to find markets on this stuff. That being said, do you find anything worth betting? What are your thoughts here on what Philly does with the third pick?
Yeah, and Edgecombe, by the way, now minus 200. Ace Bailey is 4-1. That's at least at DraftKings as far as the odds go. What you said, and as far as the potential, like the pass, how you view Embiid, I mean, it's got to be the latter, right? Because as opposed to what you said, let's just, try to get him, 50 games, play, sit him every other game, something like that. Philly already tried to do that. They already said, we're not playing him on back-to-backs. We're going to rest him as much as humanly possible. I mean, that didn't even work. They could approach it like it was the English Premier League, try to play him 38 games, do it like once a week. I'm not even sure you could guarantee Embiid gets to 38 or 40, which is not even half the season. So you have to be looking at it as this is just kind of massaging a sunk cost right now. And we can't really put too much of our resources into massaging that any further. There's just no point. Because of Edgecombe has good good length as a 6'7" sort of shooting guard here, but who has the ability to, you know, to really create inside as well. So given the 3-point shooting that Philadelphia already does have, it would make a lot of sense for me that if Edgecombe, who I thought had a really nice season for a Baylor team that I ultimately disappointed. I mean, that was a top five projected team in the preseason. They end up getting what they're on the 8-9 seed line and win one game before being clearly not even close to the top 16, getting thoroughly handled in the second round there. But that's where I would still see that making the most sense. And I mean, we've already kind of seen in an NFL sense how this has played out, like with Shedeur Sanders, where, you know, you kind of maybe intentionally tank some of these meetings, and teams I think just get fed up with that. It's like, okay, we don't want the guy who, if he is tanking a meeting intentionally, that means he doesn't want to be there. So if he doesn't want to be there, why are we going to just force that situation on him with how immature these guys tend to be and how the NBA has really navigated towards such a player empowerment, player first era? That just generally doesn't work out well. The history tells us that, even going back to when my Milwaukee Bucks infamously drafted E. Gian Lien, who said, "I'm not playing in Milwaukee." And they're like, "Well, he'll figure it out. He'll come around to Milwaukee soon enough." And, newsflash, he never did. And it was a total disaster of a pick. So I think based on the history, Philly's smart enough to say, look, not worth picking the guy who doesn't want to be there based on all the info we're getting right now. If, in fact, that is actually true with what has been reported so far.
There's still time on Yee. I wouldn't give up yet.
You don't think so? Maybe come back for another bring back Yee for another year. Anyway, when we return, Ryan Hammer, he'll help us sort through what is smoke, what is real. He does an outstanding job as an NBA draft analyst, college basketball analyst as well. Excited to get Ryan Hammer's thoughts on the NBA draft when we return, continuing on Live Bet Sunday.
Live Bet Sunday on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
We welcome you back, Live Bet Sunday with Will Hill. I'm Ben Wilson, a Daniel Nava sighting. Just what we all thought when we woke up on this brilliant Sunday morning in the middle of summer, Will. You can explain further.
Rob Refsnyder turns the tables here, at least so far in the top of the fifth, a leadoff single for the Red Sox, followed by a Refsnyder who's very good against lefties. A 2-run homer off Robbie Ray. So Boston 3, San Francisco 2, trying to get home this Red Sox, plus a half a run on the first five. What could possibly go wrong?
There's nothing that I could possibly think of. We love the random. Call it the Daniel Nava, just the super random homer out of nowhere. Rob Refsnyder, 408 at AT&T Park. Way to go, Will. Just hang on one more half inning there, 3-2 lead. We'll have more MLB updates coming up a little bit later. Also, continue to keep you posted on where the lines are going for Game 7 tonight, NBA Finals. As we go out to our progressive guest line, we started our NBA draft talk last segment, and now we want to welcome in our guy Ryan Hammer, who does great work breaking down all things college hoops during the season. And then this is that sort of time right now, Ryan, we go a full NBA draft discussion. So welcome here onto the show on the progressive guest line. That 3 pick is where we're all kind of wondering how do the domino effects go based on what Philadelphia does. And we've seen the betting markets now go to VJ Edgecombe at minus 200. What's your take on what's real, what's fake with this Ace Bailey situation? And if there is a slide, how far does he potentially drop?
Yeah, I think anything after 3 is considered a slide at this point, right? Because he's been looked at as the number 3 prospect in the class for a while by a lot, and the assumed number 3 pick. I do think he's going to slide. I think most of it is real. I know with sources that he hasn't been working out for a lot of teams. I know that he has worked out with Washington privately, that people haven't talked about in a couple of other spots. But he really is interestingly going about the draft process like we have seen before, even in, like you guys mentioned before, with Shedeur and other sports and stuff like that. So I do think it's real. It's a big domino because other teams that are willing to swing on the upside might be calling to trade up, right? Brooklyn's at 8. Maybe they need to jump in front of Washington at 6 and get to 5 where Utah is, if Utah's not going to take them, or someone else like New Orleans wants to come up. So it's going to be a big domino effect from there. I think once pick 3 goes in and it's not Ace Bailey, then the dominoes are going to start to go crazy.
Ryan, let's just say we're talking a week from now. Will we be reviewing this draft saying everybody's mock draft was pretty much in the top 10 right more than it wasn't? Or is this going to be one where things get off the rails, somebody comes out of nowhere with the fifth or sixth pick, and then everyone's mock drafts kind of get blown to hell? And if that's the case, who's the player that can upset the apple cart and kind of sneak into the top, you know, 7 or 10 here and upset people's drafts, mock drafts?
Yeah, listen, there's always something that happens. It's very, very rare that you just get exactly what we've all been looking at and stuff like that. I know my mocks are never spot on. No one's ever really spot on in a mock draft. But looking at guys that might jump up, honestly, I think a guy like Noah Esenge, he's the one international prospect towards the top that I think has benefited a lot later in the process. He's still been playing over in Europe, big, long, French, versatile prospect that I feel like has been a very much of a prototype of what the NBA has been loving the last few years. But I could see someone like him jumping up to maybe the Raptors at 9, even Utah at 5, or if they trade back a spot or two, or Washington at 6. He's definitely a super interesting player that could definitely jump up. Cedric Coward and Nick Clifford are definitely ones to watch, two of the older, I guess, mid-major, lower-level guys that are definitely certifiably awesome, but the common public aren't fully on them like the scouts are, on both of them like the scouts are as much. So I'd say Coward, but definitely Esenge is one to watch.
Just looking up some of our updated odds here, just to give everybody some context here. Esenge, you can get 12-1 to go top 5, and it would probably be 2 Utah, which is right now you can actually get it would be 8-1 right now. So that's actually better bang for your buck if you picked him top 5 there on a draft prop there. As far as Nick Clifford to go top 10, Nick is 15-1. Pretty awesome rise for Nick too. I remember I watched him at Colorado back at the start of his career, and he's at a really nice rise after having injury struggles to begin his career there. Another player that will be interesting, I think we always kind of talk ourselves into, you know, the guys who obviously are seen on the biggest stage, right, Ryan, in the NCAA tournament. Remember back in March, a lot of people were thinking, man, Con Knipple is going to be a guy. Seems like he'll shoot up some draft boards, but like what a steal that guy is going to be at the end of the lottery or in the 14th or 15th pick. And well, that was a fun conversation then, because now the mocks pretty much have him going. We've seen him rise as high as 4th on some of these boards here. I'm seeing Knipple on the latest odds now to be drafted top 5. Con Knipple -130. Was a pretty good plus money number even just 2-3 weeks ago. So where do you stand on Knipple in this sort of, I guess it's almost like domino effect season where you see the, you know, like the one guy get popular and everybody sort of falls in love with him, and we all become kind of victims of like one or two sort of general scouting reports. How high do you actually see Knipple end up going based on how universally loved he's become through this whole process?
Yeah, he's definitely a benefactor of the Ace Bailey saga and what's been going on for sure. He's one of the few prospects that are a big benefactor, and what his bank account will be the big benefactor of getting a couple picks higher. I think 4 is honestly where I'm probably going to mock him in my final mock, unless anything goes crazy to Charlotte. Super high floor player. He's just so smart, so mature on and off the floor, but on the court, everything, every decision is concise and with intelligence and with done with conviction and confidence. And he's very easy to slide to any NBA team. I think he fits really well with the Hornets. Assume VJ Edgecombe goes, maybe Trey Johnson, and then him are probably the likely guys to go in that 3-4-5 spot in some kind of order.
Do you think the fact that the Suns now have the 10th pick instead of Houston, does that change anything? Anybody that now you could see sneaking into the top 10 that you couldn't otherwise here with the trade here today with Durant?
Yeah, which what a wild wrench, obviously. We're waiting for something crazy like that. It's good to have it. At 10 is going to be interesting to the Suns because we don't know what they're going to keep doing, right? I don't think they're going to shop Booker, but they're probably going to try to shop Beal in some capacity. Maybe they're shopping Jalen Green and a bunch of other assets that they have. So are they going to swing for more long-term to wait a year or two to try to build around Booker for his last couple of years of his prime? Or are they going to try to go for experience? Could we talk about a guy like Nick Clifford, like we said before, could sneak in there where they say, great, we got off KD just because we felt like we needed to make a change and we got a bunch of assets, but we still want to win now. They could go a lot of different ways. I think Kaspers Jakaciones is someone who's probably around even, I forget what the odds just said, to go in the top 10, but I like him a lot in the top 10 with the Suns there because with the Rockets, I'm like, I don't know if they're going to take another offensive guard and like that they don't really need right now, so.
Jakob Jonas, under 11.5, his position prop minus 135. So that's not truly like a top 10, but pretty close there on Jakob Jonas, as we're talking with Ryan Hammer right now on Live Bet Sunday. We were just showing on the screen one of your earlier NBA mock drafts. So look for the final mock draft to come out a little bit later this week. Check out Ryan at RyanHammer09. I think the one guy that really jumped out, just looking at, you know, looking at your first mock and seeing now where the workouts have come, where some of the odds are priced, Derek Queen, you're an East Coast guy. He's certainly, we all have an affinity. Anybody who bet on Maryland in any way in the NCAA tournament to have an affinity for Derek Queen. And he's sitting 11.5 right now, minus 115 each way here. Your first mock, you had him 6. He's actually favored to be drafted 10th right now, plus 450 to go 10th overall. That pick that, as Will mentioned now, is occupied by Phoenix. Where do you see Queen at this point in the draft? And where do you have him going now in your final mock?
Yeah, I'm working on it right now, actually. I think he's still going to go top 10 for me. I know NBA teams love his skill set and his unique on-ball ability at his size and his craft and game IQ. He's a super unique guy. So I think top 10 makes sense. He could go 10. I think the Raptors at 9. I think the Wizards still at 6 might consider him. I think the Nets at 8 are a really good fit. So because there are multiple teams that I can be like, yep, he could go there, he could go there, he could go there, he could go there. That's why I still like him to go top 10.
Last minute or so, Ryan, anyone that we haven't mentioned that you have strong conviction, either falling, rising, take it whatever direction you like?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a couple of guys like Jace Richardson, people love him from Michigan State. I love him. He's a great kid, great player too. I don't think he's going to end up going super high. Maybe he cuts into the top 20 at its peak. Colin Murray-Boyles is an interesting one. He's a super polarizing prospect that people either seem to be very in or out on. I'm towards out. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle on that. I don't think he could sneak into the late lottery, but I take my chances that he kind of goes after that. And then I think a guy like Walter Clayton is been slept on for way too long. I do think there's a chance that he slides a little bit further into like the early 20s where he should probably be getting lottery consideration. But I wouldn't be surprised if a team like OKC or the Spurs or the Hawks or someone at 13 or 14 or 15 just pulled the trigger.
Yep, couple of odds, too, to just kind of tail on that. Ryan, we have Richardson, 19.5, over slightly juiced at minus 120 for Jace Richardson. Colin Murray-Broyles, 14.5, so right lined up at the end of the lottery, minus 120 to the under. And Clayton at one point, Clayton's odds are only available in the to-be-drafted in the first-round market, and he's gotten pounded in that. He's now minus 550 to go in the first round, which I would argue still isn't a horrible bet. I think his stock has risen so much. He's going to go in the first 30 picks there. So can't wait to see how it plays out over the next few days, sir. Who do you got tonight, Game 7?
I'll go with OKC. They've been the best team in the league all year long since October. I'm just going to go with my gut.
Love it. Can't wait to see how it all plays out. Best of luck here. I know it's a crazy grind this time of year getting all the draft content going, Ryan. So appreciate, as always, you taking the time with us today.
For sure. Thanks for having me. I love it.
RyanHammer09. We'll talk some more NBA Finals. We're just a couple hours away as we roll on here on Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
We welcome you back. We're halfway through our edition of Live Bet Sunday with Will Hill. You can follow at not the Will Hill. Check out the Shoulda Bet More podcast. I'm Ben Wilson. Is it Shoulda Bet More on a day like today, Will? Where it has been bad beat after bad beat on the MLB here. You're holding it. You're keeping it together, just barely. I'll play therapist for a second. What happened? What can I help you with on the bad beat carousel?
I'm so annoyed right now. So Astros first five money line, they're down 2-0 in the fifth. You could say, you know what? I probably didn't deserve to win it anyway because you're down 2-0 in the fifth. Hendricks is cruising, fine. But the Astros score 4 runs. I'm in good shape. 4-2, bottom of the fifth. 2 on. I'm a little nervous, but there's 2 out. A 3-run homer, as we just had Ryan on, to give the Angels a 5-4 lead after 5 and hurt my Astros bet, lose my Astros bet. The Boston one plus a half a run gets home. Cleveland in the A's first 5 under. That one gets home. This was the only loser, and this was a harsh one. And to make matters worse, to start the top of the sixth, looked like a leadoff single, and then a 2-run homer for Houston as they go back in front 6-5. That one stings. To have the Diamondbacks first five money line and the Astros first five money line to lose both those within like the hour or so, man, that's baseball, yeah. Susan, as they say, man, that's a painful, painful defeat, but I would say they even out, but that has never been proven to me. I want to see the you know, the data, the spreadsheet that says somewhere that these even out. I know how our brain works, and we remember the ones that hurt and lose more than we remember the ones that win. But boy, I'm a little annoyed. And you made the mistake. You mistakenly credited me during the break of keeping it together when I, you know, I have a bad beat or I lose. I'm a little bit sour right now, Benji.
Benji, yep. I take full responsibility for it. I was giving you so much credit. It's only part my fault. You could try getting it back on. We got USA Haiti coming up. There's a lot of other. You could just pound Tommy Fleetwood live. Fleetwood, by the way, just bogeyed. Fleetwood bogeys 16. So this has gotten a little more interesting. Just up the road from you there, at the insurance company sponsored Travelers Championship there in Connecticut. Tommy Fleetwood was minus $4, Will. Bogey's 16, so he's back to 15 under. Jason Day, Russell Henley, Keegan Bradley all sitting at 14 under par. And Keegan, 4-1 right now. Henley plus 750. Jay Day, 22-1, indicating he's in a little bit of trouble there on 17. So it's tightened up. It's been fun to watch after Fleetwood really took this tournament by storm with an incredible multi-eagle third round yesterday.
Who's the bet? Is there a bet to be made here? If you had to, I'm guessing you don't want to lay the minus 250, although you're not opposed to, you know, value is value, and you'll lay it if you think it's justified. What's the best number right here if you were suggesting a bet?
I think what I would do is, honestly, the winner without is still up right now. And you've got three guys tied with, Henley has three holes to play. Day and Bradley have two, and I'm getting Henley plus 180. Keegan minus 110. I'll pull up what the fourth round numbers are as far as the just the live data. But, you know, going into today, Henley's ball striking, who Henley's always a great iron player. His ball striking has been just incredible, all tournament. And I figured that would continue to go. So I'm just pulling up the strokes gained data here for round four as far as some of the approach stuff. And just looking at Henley specifically, because especially when you come down the home stretch, that really matters a lot. You know, and he's given a little back today. He's actually minus in the field in approach. So just hasn't really, he's able to, his numbers are really all tour average. So it's not like there's no regression either way. Bradley's the one who has not been good, off the tee. Bradley struggled. He's lost strokes on approach. He's lost strokes around the green. The putter's really saved Keegan today, which is not part of the game. Usually rely on Keegan Bradley to kind of get back into a golf tournament. He's gained almost 2.5 strokes putting today. Granted, we have two holes left, so it's not like you're looking at this and you can say that's worth an actionable bet. But the fact that you've got an extra hole to play here for Henley, plus 180, a tie just means you dead heat it, and you were at plus money anyway, so you're pretty much chopping that down to around a pick'em sort of payout if they do tie. I actually don't think that's a bad bet to make.
Something just changed because winner without, Bradley just went to minus 275, Henley went to plus 450, and Day went to plus 850, and as I say that, all these markets get grayed out, so something seemed to have happened there. And just quickly back to the baseball, the Astros continue to score. Another base hit, and it looks like a double. Guy goes to third on the throw, so it's now 7-5 Astros. Man on third, nobody out. Oh, probably about to be 8-5, and then the Red Sox go deep to make it 5-4. A lot of runs in this Boston-San Francisco game.
Yeah, that game already went over. Over, and we're here in the sixth inning. Henley bogeys 16, so he had a medium length par putt. Thought it was a pretty good look to save par. Well, he misses, so that's why you've seen the odds change in such a manner like that. Update from the College World Series: LSU Tigers 3 outs away. We go to the bottom of the ninth, 5-3 LSU. Can they hang on? All the live odds have been taken off the board here, but they are in pretty good shape to get the job done. This total is the one that, in a College World Series, it has been such a good bet to the under. Books, I think it finally took him to the actual College World Series, Will, to kind of catch on here. DraftKings closed 8. They opened 8.5. So there was about a 15-minute span last night, and I missed it. I was on the air calling our favorite sport, Arena Football. So I did not get in. I did not go back to the well on under for game 2 after it hit under 8.5 game 1. But most of these books ended up 7.5, so over hits in game two. And LSU got bet against. They closed in some shops. I'm seeing one book that had LSU plus 113 here, Will, in game two. I was on Coastal. Doesn't look like the chance will get it done, as the Tigers will win yet another College World Series, which it's been a pretty impressive stretch here. They didn't win last year. It was Tennessee, but the year before that with Paul Skeens, they got the job done. So this will be 2 and 3 years in a sport where it is really hard to win titles in bunches there in college baseball.
Yeah, and I got the game on now. This closer is throwing absolute bullets, but they do. Coastal does get the leadoff guy here, the leadoff guy on to start the bottom of the ninth. So a leadoff single, man on first, nobody out. I'm not sure who this closer is for LSU. I'm assuming it's the closer because it's the ninth inning. 100 miles an hour on the last pitch. It's got a little movement. It's got a little run to it. So, man, these guys watching this College World Series, these guys all, it's not just the pros. These guys in college all throw so, so hard. It's incredible. And this is an LSU team, yeah. You know, three outs away from a championship. They were life and death with, was it Arkansas State, where Arkansas State beat them and then had them up like 5-6-1, Arkansas State with a lead with a chance to eliminate
Little
LSU.
Rock.
LSU Little Rock, that's what it was, Little Rock, yeah. And you know, LSU got off the mat, won that, makes their way to the World Series, and here they are three outs away. So just I wonder what Little Rock is thinking watching this game. Like, man, it could have been us. We could have made a run, but it's been a fun tournament, a lot of upsets. The upsets kind of died once you got to the College World Series, which, you know, it's not unusual. The Murray State, that Cinderella story ended, but sure. You got a lot of these fun stories here in this tournament. It was enjoyable, and we'll see if Coastal Carolina has a little magic and can keep this going as they are down to their final three outs, but they do have the tying run to the plate. Lefty up for Carolina with a very slick mustache. I'm not sure who it is, though.
Well, Chase Shores is the closer for LSU, and this is a great example of what these top-level college baseball pitchers now are in 2025. 6'8", 252, yeah. Hits 101 with a fastball, slider mid-80s, and he's already had Tommy John surgery once. Like, that pretty much is like your bingo card for just your standard top-level college baseball pitcher in 2025. That's like all these guys, it seems like they've had Tommy John. They can all throw triple digits pretty much easily. They've all got wipeout sliders in the upper 80s. Like, that's just the new normal. It is what it is. Pretty crazy.
I was actually watching LSU Little Rock. It had to be a Sunday night 2-3 weeks ago, the game Little Rock won, and this kid came in. I was like, who the hell is this guy? You know, throwing 100 miles an hour. He looks like a giant as he strikes out the batter here. So there's one out now, one out, one on, tying run at the plate. But man, this kid is absolutely throwing some gas. I will say, though, if you can catch up to one and you can connect with a metal bat and 101 mile an hour fastball, if you can connect and get it in the air, there's a chance here for Carolina to tie the game. It's just putting the bat on, it's not the easiest chore against a guy throwing this hard.
It's no Kyle Hendricks out there that you're
oh god, can you believe that? Unbelievable.
Not to make Will feel any worse, while we have a moment, Will potential future Major League Baseball Major League hitter, as long as Kyle Hendricks is on the mound. If you want to know where the money is really going, and we'll do more of these splits, we'll tell you about it for NBA Game 7 here on the other side of a break. Our betting splits come from Circa and DraftKings, straight from the source, giving insight to where all the action it is. Circa, known for taking the big bets from pro bettors, DraftKings provides a broader market perspective. So you're getting all of the real action, not just public money, but the kinds of wagers that move lines. We'll talk about the betting splits when we return. You can get them exclusively for as little as $9.99 for your first month at vsin.com/subscribe. Latest market update for Game 7. Odds board on the totals is starting to flash, and now, Will, now we're starting to get the flood of under money coming in. Circa just dropped to 214.5. One book in Vegas is at 214 flat. So maybe, I don't know, maybe a little head fake in the market there, or bettors trying to drive that price up before taking them down. That would make sense to me in a Game 7 that traditionally goes under. We'll have more to break down on that. Also talk a little NFL when we return on the NFC North, coming back on Live Bet Sunday.
This is Live Bet Sunday on VSEN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is all over at the College World Series in Omaha as we welcome you back Live Bet Sunday with Will Hill. I'm Ben Wilson. The LSU Tigers, they get it done. 5-3 win over Coastal Carolina, and they do so as actually slight underdogs in game two of the series. LSU was about minus 170 to win the actual College World Series once we got down to the final. But total ends up going over the closing number, under the opening number, landing right on 8 after it opened 8.5, closed 7.5. So congrats, Will, to LSU. And now we can turn our attention to all these baseball sweats, which we're hoping just end sooner rather than later. The Rockies win. That was a big upset over the Diamondbacks today. We get the Brewers hang on for dear life after almost blowing a late 5-run lead against the Twins. Sweep of the Twins. So, you know, it could be worse, Will, for some of your bad beats. You could be Rocco Baldelli right now, whose Twins have just completely gone in the dumpster over the month of June so far.
I appreciate you trying to make me feel better. Not necessarily working, but your efforts are greatly appreciated and recognizing. And honestly, nothing you could say other than here's a bunch of money that I'll just give you and you can borrow it or keep it. Other than that, nothing's really going to make me feel better. I'm still seething over this Astros loss. Yeah, I'm still upset. But yeah, LSU closed it out. Double play to end it. A little 4-6-3. They win. They go crazy. So twice in 3 years, LSU wins. Fun day, though. Baseball, college baseball, World Series. We get a champion there. And then we're going to have an NBA champion in what? It's about, I don't know, 7 hours? No, six hours from now? Not even. Five hours from now. Probably eight o'clock start. Probably 2.5-hour games. Yeah, 5 hours from now, we will have a champion. I'm really excited for this game. Should be a lot of fun. I think we're getting the close to 8 o'clock Eastern tip, right? It's not one of these usual 8:40, 9 o'clock starts. At 8 o'clock, just the sun's still out on the East Coast. Let's get the ball in the air, and let's crown a champion. I can't be more excited for this game, so it should be a lot of fun.
And there's no Shakira halftime show, Will. So it's not. We're not going to have the 40-minute halftime. Don't worry. No, nothing like that. It's just a normal NBA game. We're going to get our 70 seconds of NBA countdown breakdown at the half, and then we're going to keep moving on and go right into it. So looking forward to that. Jonathan Von Tobel, by the way, in 15 minutes will join a senior NBA analyst, give us his thoughts not only on Game 7, but also on the big trade today that saw Kevin Durant sent from Phoenix to Houston. And as I try to keep making you feel better, Will, JVT is an Angels fan, so at least you're not JVT in a baseball sense.
We're getting there. We're getting there. We're inching towards emotional healing. And by the way, if anyone's going to have a 40-minute halftime show and hold things up, Shakir is on the short list of people that make him acceptable.
You and Giannis Antetokounmpo, and also many others around the world, probably feel the same way on that. I've determined that your true emotional solution and healing will not be complete till I just straight up offer you like a grand on a free bet on the NFL this season. I think we've solidified that, which we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about our favorite division here in just a second. Talk some NFC North today. Before we do that, quick reminder though about the folks at Circa. Speaking of football here, they offer the Circa Millions, the Circa Survivor this year. If you're going to be in town doing those signups for the contest, well, why don't you check out and get the ultimate getaway here for just $400. Go all in and get a two-night stay at Circa, $100 dining credit, $100 beverage credit, your very own day bed at Stadium Swim. For just $400, resort fees and taxes included. This is a limited-time offer through September 4th, so don't miss out. Lock in your all-in summer package now at CircaLasVegas.com. You might even get a free video message from Will Hill. Just depends on how his bets are going that day. I can't confirm or deny that, Will.
That is a hell of a deal. I mean, that's one I know people that are even living in Vegas. Like, even though I live here, I might take you up on this because, look, for those prices, you really can't go wrong. I don't know if Mike Palm throws in an autograph for it. That would be like the deluxe package, a Mike Palm autograph, you know, poster, picture, anything. But, you know, all kidding aside, that is a really good deal. A lot of bang for your buck there. That's what we call plus EV play right there.
Plus EV, 100%. I've been told that you get a free bet on a South American, either Bolivian, Peruvian, or Argentinian soccer match from Mike Palm. It's probably going to be an under 2, but just know you're going to get a free bet from Mike Palm. I think that is very, very safe to say. Soccer day, too. Didn't even mention the soccer wheel. We've got the Gold Cup. Who doesn't love the Gold Cup? USA and Haiti wrapping up the group stage in just over an hour. USA massive favorites after 4-0 win over Trinidad and Tobago. 1-0 win over Saudi Arabia there in match number two. But we're not talking about that right now. We're talking NFC North. If I were to give you that that $1,000, Will, that you clearly desperately need, what team in the North are you putting it on this year? Detroit plus 140, your favorite. Pack plus 260. Vikings 4-1. Bears plus 425 heading into this year.
This is so tough because this division is about as deep, as loaded as I can remember any division. Usually, even in a good division, you have one weakish team. Any four of these playing in like an NFC title game, I wouldn't be shocked if people say, really, the Bears in an NFC title game? I'm not a huge Caleb Williams fan, but if there's talent there, we're going to see it this year because they have really put a ton of you know stuff around him. Last year, it was more the dessert sort of scenario where you just give him the receivers, you give him everything that he needs in terms of like the fantasy football guys. But this year they've really supplemented the offensive line. They give him a coach. They draft the tight end. I thought a lot of these draft picks, a couple of these draft picks can really help them right away. Their defense, I think, will be better. I mean, I think this Bears team is really, really good. Detroit, I know they lost the coordinators and there's a concern for regression there in a first place schedule, but there's still the Lions. There's still a ton of talent there. The Vikings, we'll see what McCarthy gives them, but that's a loaded roster. And I think people are sleeping on the Packers a little bit. I know, look, they were disappointing last year. Every time they stepped up in competition against the Lions, against the Vikings, I forget who else, they have in the Eagles, they just could never, really break through. That being said, sometimes it's the year after they're everybody's sleeper. And they were everybody's darling last summer because they beat the Cowboys. They were competitive against the 49ers, should have won that game. And that was a very trendy pick. The Packers to go to the Super Bowl. I think they burned people last year, came in third place, didn't win a game in the playoffs. Like I said, weren't competitive against the better teams. People are going to be off Green Bay, so I wouldn't be surprised if Green Bay, has a better season than people expect. That being said, I'm talking a lot. I haven't given out a bet. I guess I'd probably just go Minnesota at 4-1 because if McCarthy can give you like B-, C-plus play with that roster, with that coaching staff, could you win the division with 11, maybe 12 wins? It's possible. I thought they've had, good draft, good offseason. So I think all of these teams are good. I'm not rushing to bet any of this stuff. I guess I just go for the 4-1 on Minnesota, but you could talk me into any one of these teams winning the division. Bears might feel like a little bit of a stretch just because they feel like the weakest of the four teams, but there's a path here where Ben Johnson's a really good coach right away and all of the offseason additions, propel them to being a legitimately really good team. So it's anybody's guess. I mean, I'm kind of throwing my hands up in the air and say good luck. I think here's the thing, that they're all going to beat each other up to the point where I don't think anyone, what took 15 wins to win the division last year? Minnesota and Detroit had 14 heading into that final Sunday night game where Darnold basically just threw up all over himself. Nobody's winning 14. Nobody's winning 15. I think like 12, maybe even 11 wins it because I think these teams are all so good, they're all going to cannibalize each other.
Makes a lot of sense, especially when I think a great debate you could even have is who's the best coach in this division with yes. I mean, with what Kevin O'Connell's gotten out of his completely lackluster quarterback play. I mean, forget last year with Sam Darnold. The year before, for half the season, he had four different journeyman guys off the street quarterbacks, and their collective combined EPA was like 16th in the league. I mean, with a bunch of guys who should have been third stringers. So that's exactly where, for Minnesota, like we've already seen this story. We've seen Kevin O'Connell be able to use his system to get the absolute most out of a quarterback. Why would it? And again, Minnesota was in a similar, I mean, their win total wasn't as high last year, it was a little bit lower, but it was still the same principle at play with how people were sleeping on the Vikings. As far, for me on the Packers with the 9.5 win total, this is now year, like the full third year as a starter for Jordan Love. And there were clearly, I don't want to say it was like a sophomore slump for Love, but I thought the growing process for him last year was clearly getting to a point of he had the confidence to do the little things right, like the fundamentals. He got a little bit, I think it was a learning process for him trying to figure out when to push accurately, when to take the throw right in front of him. And he was unable to really find that balance accurately. There was some times where he didn't need to make the super aggressive play, and he tried to make it, and it completely backfired for Green Bay. I think that's where you see a level up this year for Green Bay. And they've had so much continuity within that system and bring back so many of the key pieces. Really, Jaire Alexander as the exception, who was injury-riddled anyway. And that's why it totally makes sense for me to see Green Bay neck and neck with Detroit. I'd kind of put them more like 1A, 1B, as opposed to a clear 1 and 2, as the oddmakers suggest heading into this year.
So that's your bet? If I gave you one thing to bet on, you take the plus 260 on Green Bay?
Yeah, I'll take. I'll give you the 1,000. You just give it right back to me because you didn't. You know, you're not making an official pick, and I won't fulfill you emotionally, but I'll at least get a free bet out of it. That was my own money somehow.
Like a couple of homers here. I'm taking the Vikings. You're taking your Packers. But I think you're honest with me.
We might be onto something there. When we return, final hour, Live Bet Sunday, Jonathan Von Tobel, senior NBA analyst at VSiN, joins us to talk all things Game 7 and Kevin Durant.